A huge report released last week which showed astounding variations in diagnostics, prescribing and surgery across Australia. For example, a 75-fold difference in the prescribing rates for ADHD, attention deficit hyperactivity disorder medications for children. If that prescribing is in fact merited, there are some communities in New South Wales where ADHD must be in pandemic proportions. Is it a national childhood emergency? Or is it really that some paediatricians are incontinent with the script pad? Also, big differences in antidepressants, antibiotics, dangerous medications in the elderly, addictive painkillers, cataract surgery, knee surgery, and so the list goes on. The report is called the Australian Atlas of Healthcare Variation. The person who chaired the group which supervised the development of the Atlas on behalf of the Australian Commission for Safety and Quality in Healthcare was Professor Anne Duggan of the University of Newcastle. And Anne is in our Newcastle studio now. Welcome to the Health Report.
Thank you, Norman.
So this is we've had you on the Health Report a couple of times before, prefacing this over the last year or two. Now it's out.
Yes, and I think I agree with you. It's a really important report and the basis of some important work to move forward on.
Now, each of the last two occasions I've had you on, Anne, talking about this, you've kind of avoided saying, well, this is outrageous, unacceptable variation, and you've sort of qualified it. Let's just walk through some of the results. So antibiotics, 30 million scripts a year. If you take the uncorrected, you know, the outliers on either side, the high prescribers and the low prescribers, there's 16 times the difference in antibiotics that doctors really shouldn't be prescribing unless they absolutely have to. And if you take out the tops and the bottoms and average it out, it's about threefold difference. I mean, that's big differences. And it takes a doctor to write out a script. I mean,
Norman, I agree with you. That is phenomenally high, 30 million prescriptions dispensed, and that excludes the ones that were actually prescribed and were never taken up. There's no doubt that we are very high by world standards in antibiotic prescribing and dispensing, and i.e. people filling their script. We exceed Canada, we exceed the US, and I think that this is an emergency because we are at risk of developing bugs that are resistant to our antibiotics. Irrespective of the variation, I think we need to actually learn the lessons of other places around the world and reduce our overall prescribing of antibiotics. But I take issue with the point that it is purely a clinician that does it. We actually, a consultation is a discussion between a clinician and a patient. And in the background is society and what's the messages society is saying about antibiotics. So there's a lot of work to be done, not just with clinicians and script pads.
On this morning's Big Ideas on ABC television, I interviewed Don Berwick, one of the giants of safety and quality in healthcare. And he said there's never been demand in healthcare that hasn't been generated by doctors. You know, they're the ones who do it. So we can talk about the two-way thing, but essentially it's a doctor-driven demand. He's quite strong on that.
I would disagree with him because I think there's a number of issues here. One is that we are, as a society, becoming more aware of what we think we need, and we don't necessarily inform the community very well all the time about the evidence for things. So I think there's an element of clinician and there's an element of patient and society. I think we need to get better at informing the community, giving people better information, recognising health literacy concerns for Australia, which are quite high, recognising that often there are treatment options and you really need decision aids to be able to work out what the hell's going on and what the options are. And on the flip side for the clinician, I think where health is incredibly complex and so the evidence for things changes over time. So for a clinician to keep up with the latest is very difficult, particularly if you're a generalist. So even though
I don't underestimate that, but a 30-fold difference in colonoscopies, where if you live in the eastern suburbs of Sydney or the western suburbs of Perth, you're far more likely to get an unnecessary colonoscopy than somebody living in a poorer suburb. I mean, is that just the complexity of the doctor-patient relationship? Or is that some of you, I mean, you're a gastroenterologist, some of your colleagues, to be blunt, paying their mortgages?
Norman, I think that there are two things here. One are the outliers, which really certainly make the numbers, as you say, 30-fold. But let's separate the outliers out, who may not be representative of the general gastroenterologist, we then have something like a fourfold variation. Some of that variation is, as you saw from the maps, is due to the fact that in rural and remote Australia, we don't have a workforce often that can manage to provide a service. So one of the most important things I think in this is be absolutely clear on what right looks like. It's not just getting rid of the variation, it's getting evidence-based care into practice. So the Atlas is great for saying, look, not everybody can be right. Let's sit down with the experts and say what right looks like. So if we look at colonoscopy, one of the most important roles colonoscopy has for us in Australia is reducing the morbidity and mortality from bowel cancer. We have a national bowel cancer screening program, and if you look at that, we're really not using colonoscopy as in the way it should be used, i.e. encouraging people to take part in the national bowel cancer screening by doing their fecal occult blood test, which is that test on the motion, and then if positive, going having a colonoscopy. So one of the things I'm very keen is that we don't get distracted from the main game. The main game is to ensure that Australians get appropriate care. In gastroenterology, I think one of the most important things is to try and reduce the mortality from bowel cancer, which is up there in the top three currently.
But here's an area where absolutely clearly, I mean, you talk about, for example, just as a slight distraction, you know, ear tubes and tonsillectomy in children where there's no guidelines out there, as far as at least that's what you said in the report. But here's a place where there's good guidelines out for when a colonoscopy is merited. How come we're not following the guidelines?
I think that's a really good point, and I think that's why if you look at the 68-odd recommendations that put in as part of this report, we've got some very robust recommendations about improving the guidelines, the practice around colonoscopy, particularly for bowel cancer screening.
But so let's come back to health literacy. To what extent is it in the end the patient's responsibility to get the doctor to abide by the guidelines? Because we've got, you know, acres of guidelines, but they're not being followed. And we're not unique. I mean, that's true of almost every developed country in the world. Guidelines just in general are not being followed.
Well, as you know, the Australian Commission on Safety and Quality in Healthcare led this work, and it will also lead some important work in this regard. And what's come out of the Commission to date and will continue to come out from the Commission are clinical care standards, which give advice to clinicians and available to the patient about what the standard is. I think one of the problems we've had is we've had far too many guidelines put out by a whole lot of people available in all sorts of ways. What we need is a really clear, readily available, reputable guideline that can easily be accessed by anyone who wants to know what is the current standard. And I think that'll be a huge step forward.
Now, we've seen a commendable leadership on the part of the College of Surgeons who've come out calling out their colleagues for unreasonable charging and so on. But to what extent do you think doctors are willing to have strong and honest conversations with their colleagues? There's a big investment in what's called clinical governance, but are we willing to have honest conversations with our colleagues when they're out of line?
Well, I'm one of these people who believes in the glass is half full and in the tipping point. I think we're getting to a tipping point. I think people are realising that when there are outliers who don't represent and are not necessarily outliers because their streets ahead and they are at the forefront of evidence, but outliers because they're not following best practice, I think we're more and more getting to a point where we'll see that happening.
And Duggan, what's the highest priority action moving forward then from this atlas, do you think?
It is getting the recommendations in place involving all the levels of policymakers, clinicians, patients, all levels of the healthcare system, so that we can actually get more appropriate care for every Australian, and that will make it safer healthcare and a higher quality healthcare, and we will have the resources to be putting into areas where we're not currently focused, where we should be. I'm patently aware that our Indigenous population has a life expectancy 10 years less than ours.
And thank you. Good luck with that. And we'll have a link to your report for anybody who wants to see what's happening in their suburb on the Health Report's website. Anne Duggan is a Professor of Medicine and Public Health at the University of Newcastle and Senior Medical Advisor to the Australian Commission for Safety and Quality in Healthcare. It's a really good and in detail report. And you're listening to the Health Report here on RN with me, Norman Swan.